ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Everybody, welcome to the Attention Please podcast now on video. If you like the podcast, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So initially, my plan was to do a podcast on Elon Musk and his takeover Twitter. But then we had that day of cricket yesterday. And what a glorious day. What a glorious day of glorious uncertainties. Or based on what you believe, the ultimate day of shenanigans of the ICC. Of course, I do not subscribe to conspiracy theories, but if you do, and there are so many on Twitter who does, especially when their team loses, of course, one could always argue that that Pakistan was made to win so that they can then go and beat New Zealand, because New Zealand would definitely have beaten Bangladesh, and India cannot beat New Zealand. So this was all part of the evil ICC, BCCI conspiracy. You could obviously claim that. And I'm pretty sure many people will, if they haven't already. I haven't kept my ears to social media chatter, but I'm pretty sure somebody's already made this connection that this was why Pakistan won. Of course, no matter what happens, Pakistan will always accuse India of pretty much everything. So that's a given. Same with Bangladesh. But sometimes I find surprising that many Indians do too. So that's the thing. Anyways, so. For me, it was a day of glorious uncertainties, that cliche that I heard growing up from Narottam Puri. And nobody could have believed, at least a few weeks ago, that Pakistan would make it to the semifinals, but they did. And that's one of the things about Pakistan, that you can never write them off. That's what makes them such an exciting team. But before we get to Pakistan, we have to talk about that shocker of a decision on Shakib Ul Hasan. So that was really game changing, because at that point of time, the momentum of the game was firmly with Bangladesh when Shakib was given first ball LBW decision, and it was absolute. It was not out on so many counts. It was not just the fact that there was no conclusive evidence provided that the ball didn't hit the bat, but it was also that Shakib was out of his crease. It was very difficult to say that, you know, given where he was stuck almost on full toss, that the ball would have hit the stumps. It was, I mean, forget the benefit of the doubt, which again is not something which is enshrined in the laws. It is something which is a convention. So when people say benefit of the doubt goes to the batsman, that's really not the law. That's just convention. But ultimately, I think for me, it kind of brings to focus one of the bugs of the whole third umpire referral system, which is the way it is nowadays, is that the decision of the third umpire, when they review something like an LBW or caught behind, they can only overturn the on-field umpire's call if they have incontrovertible evidence that the on-field umpire was wrong. So, for instance, if the non-field umpire gives not out and there is a nick, and the nick is proven beyond doubt, then yes, the decision can be overturned. But in the absence of any concrete evidence, in that doubt, the third umpire really can't do anything. So I know that the third umpire has come in for a lot of flack, but I think that the real guilty party is the on-field umpire for even giving that out. I thought, based on the evidence, that even the evidence was kind of incontrovertible, that the ball had hit the bat. But even then, one could say there was some doubt. But there were so many other factors which made it very unlikely that the ball would have hit the wicket. And this, as I said, there needs to be a revisiting of the whole referral system. It should be possible for the third umpire to look at each of the pieces of evidence independently and take a call. And of course, one can't say that, you know, it has to depend on the on the person whose decision is being considered. Of course, everybody should be treated the same, but especially in a game like this, especially given how important that decision was, just to see such a tournament, which has otherwise been so sensational, kind of turn on the basis of a very poor bit of cricket from the umpires. I think that it's going to be a tragedy overall. In a way, you can argue that the system as it stands is okay, but obviously it isn't. What happened yesterday with Shakib shouldn't have happened. It was shocking. But let's come back to Pakistan. So the thing is, you can never write them off. And again, for those of us who are old enough to remember, this was somewhat what they had. So similar to 1992. In 1992 in the World Cup, they were in even worse state. I don't think Pakistan has played poorly throughout the tournament. Against India, it was a marginal decision. I mean, the result was marginal, gone anyway. So it wasn't that. But in 1992, Pakistan were being decimated by all the teams before they made the turnaround. So it wasn't as if Pakistan were playing badly at any point of time. Yes, they had one bad game against Zimbabwe, and you could say they lost because of one great individual performance by somebody who's having, basically the greatest year of their life, what I like to call the Jayadrath year, where they're undefeatable, which is Sikandar Raza. And I think he's definitely done a lot to get an IPL call, given that there is a mini auction. I'm pretty sure that he's going to make a lot of money. I hope he does. But Pakistan, again, I think overall their main problem in the first game was they basically misread the pitch and didn't take Wasim Jr. That would have Mohammad Wasim Jr. That if he had played, then I don't think India would have won that game. Again, with Zimbabwe, they were eliminated by a piece of individual brilliance. Not eliminated, but they lost, and we thought they had been eliminated. But then trust South Africa to do what South Africa does. And again, it's worth, there was this Sachin Tendulkar tweet, which was obviously something which is PR put together about going Dutch and choking. The height of dad jokes, I would say. But I don't think South Africa kind of choked. South Africa weren't a great team. They didn't play great. Yes, they beat India, but they beat India in a game which India played terribly. South Africa decimated the minnows, at least some of them, but overall it just didn't seem to be a balanced team. I think their bowling was very weak given the conditions. There was only Norrie, who was like head and shoulders above the rest, and Rabada, I don't know what's happened to him. He seemed to be almost Dindaish in his bowling, if I might use that term. It was an unrecognizable Rabada from the Rabada that I really respect. I was a huge fan of his bowling. Especially, I remember that delivery he bowled to Andre Russell in IPL in one of the super overs. It was a delivery worth remembering, even though you don't remember each of the individual IPL games anymore. They kind of all coalesce into this muddy mass in your mind. So I think that South Africa as a team also didn't perform very well. Going in, again, South Africa usually does well in ICC tournaments. They can't make it till the end, but they always put a certain exception was the last World Cup, of course. And this time, it was, I think their main problem was the bowling. I think their batting was okay. I think their bowling really, really let them down. And otherwise, coming back to Pakistan, I keep on talking about Pakistan, but get sidetracked. So with Pakistan, it's not just the on-field cricket, but also the media coverage, which I obviously obsessively follow. And one of my favorite shows is Har Lamha Purjosh, which is a very popular, apparently, cricket comedy show where the main fun is making fun of Indians. So they will have some guy who's pretending to be Dhoni or pretending to be Kohli. It's like basically anti-India trash thrown up as a cricket show. But this time, surprisingly, I mean, from the very not a lot of Har Lamha Purjosh that I watched, it was the Wasim Akram, Waqar Yunus, that really great panel. It was the most disappointing, in my opinion, in terms of their, not just jingoism, but in terms of the visceral hatred that they exhibited. I mean, so there was a story, for those of you who don't know, they were talking about during the 99 tour when Wasim Akram was the captain. And apparently Shahid Afridi, who obviously we all know who Shahid Afridi is, and you know, I don't want to get into the details of what he represents. So Shahid Afridi apparently was, they were like introducing and they were shaking hands with the Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee. And you know, Shahid Afridi basically gripped his hand so hard, apparently, intentionally to hurt the Prime Minister of India, that according to somebody, I don't remember who actually said it, maybe Wakar said it, that the poor guy almost had a heart attack. And these guys were all laughing. So Wakar Yunus, of course, you don't expect much from Wakar Yunus. And I'm not just talking about the guy who hacked into his account and liked that video, for those of you who remember or know. I'm talking about Wasim Akram. It was extremely disappointing to see Wasim Akram cackle with laughter at the prospect of hurting an old gentleman who was, you know, a gentleman, the true sense of the word, is also the Prime Minister of India. Can you imagine anybody, any Indian player, ever going and trying to do that to Musharraf, who apparently was presented with the head of an Indian soldier? Even then, would anybody do it? No, never. And if they did it, which they wouldn't, nobody would then claim pride in it, and other cricketers won't laugh like that. So it was disappointing. It was disappointing more for me because of Wasim Akram. This is somebody who I grew up idolizing. And he was always, I kind of looked at him as somebody different from the other Pakistani players. Obviously, I have no expectation from the Basit Alis and the Afridis and the Sikandar Bhats. I mean, the regulars on Harlamha Purjosh. But Wasim Akram is somebody who I've grown up respecting. He's an amazing player. He still will be an amazing player. He'll be a player of the kind that I haven't seen hence in terms of his abilities with the ball. Also, as a T20 batsman before T20 became a thing. But as a bowler, just the amount of craft that he brought. But it's just to see this guy laugh, and the kind of laughter, just the hatred comes out. And the masks are off. I mean, he basically had been wearing a mask, I would say, for so long. And I think the mask falling off is really, you can trace it to Pakistanis not being allowed into IPL. I think that's where they basically lost all the pretense of even Aman Ki Asha. Once they were refused, and it is going on for almost a decade, more than a decade now, that they have not been allowed into IPL. So all these ex-cricketers who, and by the way, Wasim Akram used to be a coach for Kolkata Knight Riders, even after the Pakistani players were banned, by the way. So I think increasingly it's become difficult for ex-Pakistani cricketers to get employment within IPL, not just as players, but also as coaches. And I think that has really, really made them, I mean, they were like, okay, fine. Now I don't have to even appease the Indians. I can actually say what I want to say. And there is sufficient traction in Pakistan also with PSL and with everything that they can say, you know what, I don't care. Let me at least get my core base happy. It was extremely disappointing for me. But again, why should I concentrate on the negative when it was an amazing T20 World Cup in terms of cricket? It was absolutely great cricket throughout. And of course, the performance of the so-called minnows were what made this T20 World Cup very special. And this is obviously one of the things that make the T20 format such an interesting format. Because, and I've said this before, is that the disparity in class, let's say, or in playing prowess between Team A and Team B, that difference becomes more and more evident the longer the game is. So in a five-day game, there is really no chance, I would say, that Netherlands could beat South Africa, even this South Africa. I mean, Netherlands might win one session or two sessions, but over the different sessions in a 5 days, South Africa would pummel them. But in T20, given the very abbreviated nature of the game, it is possible to win a mini session and basically take the game away. And that's exactly what happens in T20. That's why it makes T20 so exciting. And unlike other World Cups where these minnows game were usually some kind of dead space between the real games, this time, these games were some of the best games because especially Netherlands, Ireland, these players play together a lot. Unlike, and I think the greatest example of the counter example of that is West Indies, which is a team which doesn't play together at all. which you could obviously see do not like playing together as a team. They're very good individual contributors. This is what I had said. It's like a group of great individual contributors or great consultants, really, being put together and forced into a team. Like, they didn't even want to be there. They would rather be playing in, you know, Dubai in a T10 tournament, you know, hitting the leather of a delivery bolt by some guy from Zimbabwe. That is what they exist only to make money. But there's nothing wrong about it, but they obviously do not want to play as a team. And it was evident. I mean, West Indies, just to have a T20 tournament without the West Indies in the main draw, it would have been a terrible tournament if you think of it. But it wasn't. We didn't miss the West Indies because there were teams like Ireland and Netherlands, which showed what... And also, I would say Afghanistan was extremely unfortunate. They got the worst of the weather. So these teams, they played great cricket. And it was very difficult to say that they were minnows. Not just minnows. They were as good sometimes. Especially, I would say, I was most impressed with Netherlands. With Ireland, we'd seen them play well before. But with Netherlands, they were their fielding, their bowling, especially the use of the conditions. And they sometimes had, they bowled in different kinds of conditions. They always managed to step up. And they were eliminated and everything. But it was so heartening. And this, I think, is good for cricket. Because what's happened with cricket, at least for me, is that you get to see the same old players, you get to see the same old teams, and you get to see these mega rich people, you know, mega rich cricketers kind of coming and signing, you know, basically dialing their dialing it in. And then a no greater example than West Indies. But here's a group of team which plays together, which has that passion. I mean, Ireland, Netherlands, they play with a lot of passion, but they play the game hard, but they don't play the game dirty. They manage to keep the spirit of the game, whatever remains. They play within that spirit, but they play hard. They play a hard game of cricket. And a lot of them are never going to make a lot of money. They're all amateurs. But when they show up together on the field, they wear their uniform, they come out, both Ireland and Netherlands. They also two of the best uniforms, in my opinion. You really want to support them. You really want to see them succeed. And what I hope, what I sincerely hope, is that the scouts of the different leagues were watching. It would really, really mean a lot if players from Zimbabwe, Netherlands, Afghanistan, is obviously some of their best players that have already been absorbed because they're supremely talented players, some of them. But Holland, I could see at least one or two, should definitely get a contract, if maybe not in IPL, but in some of the other leagues that exist in the world. I think even IPL. By the way, I've forgotten. So I should say Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka is kind of, over the last 2 or 3 years, kind of, you know, gone back into their minnows mode. But it was really heartening. They won the Asia Cup. And it was not a flash in the pan. Sri Lanka now has the nucleus, I would say, of a good side. I think it's still a nucleus. I think they still don't have 11 world-beating players, which is what you need in order to be a frontline team, which always starts out as favorites. I think Kusal Mendes has finally come into some kind of him. We've been hearing for years that he was an extremely talented. He's the next generation after Jayawardhan, and he never really stepped up. So his arrival on the stage, consistent arrival on the stage, is great for Sri Lankan cricket, and for, as a Kolkata Knight Riders fan, just, not that KKR would listen, but since they're looking for a opening batsman who's a wicketkeeper, I can't think of anybody better now than Kusal Mendes, at least in my for that position, in Indian conditions, by the way. So he's pretty good with spin. Pathum Nisanka, also another person who made a good set of consistent performances, where Sri Lanka's problem was that it was basically their 1 and 2. Once they got into 3, 4, 5, 6, it was a little inconsistent. And I think that's the reason why they did not proceed. But in terms of bowling, they have two world-class spinners. So they have two world-class spinners, two world-class batsmen. The rest seven are, Bhanuka is kind of off and on. But I think once they have at least 7 or 8 people who could walk into an IPL team, I think you'll find that Sri Lanka is back to where, you know, since the 90s they have been. So it comes back now to the predictions. We have, of course, India playing England and New Zealand playing Pakistan. So with Pakistan against New Zealand, it's a tough call. So Pakistan has definitely been bolstered by Shaheen Shah Afridi, I think, coming back into form. I think Shah Afridi was coming off an injury. At least in the initial few games, you could see that he was kind of easing himself into the game. It was not that he was out of form, but for somebody of his caliber, you know, to perform at his level, you just can't come off an injury and just start performing on day one, especially if that game is also against India. So I think it took him some amount of time, but in the last game you saw Shaheen Shah Afridi. I still think he's not at his peak, but pretty much he's obviously getting there. And New Zealand would be hoping that he doesn't get there for that game. He's going to be Pakistan's, you know, biggest. He's going to be New Zealand's biggest worry, in my opinion. Pakistan's batting obviously is weak. There is no doubt. Without Babar, Babar Azam is a great player, and he's kind of his form and fortune has kind of now been swapped with Kohli's. So without him, and he's never looked like dominating, even when he's played his like 20, 30 innings, it's just been survival at a strike rate of 100. So I think the main problem with Pakistan, which again, their experts keep calling out, is that there is no super hitting top order, which in today's T20 game, you just cannot not have. So I think Pakistan, in Dubai, they can do it. In that those conditions, they can do it. But in this condition, I don't think any of their top two batsmen, or even top three batsmen, can really score consistently at 170. They don't have it. This is a problem that India too have, by the way. But Pakistan has, because in India's at least best batsmen are at 3 and 4 at this point of time. Pakistan has really soft top order and even the middle order. I mean, there could be Iftikhar, I think. I mean, it's very strange when you say that Iftikhar is their most consistent hope, but that is true. So Pakistan does have a major problem. So, but again, if you ask me to take a call between New Zealand and Pakistan, I would say New Zealand, simply because I think New Zealand ticks all the boxes. Again, I don't think New Zealand have played very well this tournament, to be honest, but the New Zealand team has so many layers of redundancy built in. And now you have Finn Allen, that opening few shots he played against the game against Australia, which is unbelievable. Unbelievable, those shots against Hazelwood of all people. And none of them bowled badly, by the way, that day. But the way he started against Australia, he wasn't able to sustain that, of course. But it was a brute of an innings. And it just goes to show the kind of depth that one of the best T20 batsmen ever is sitting on the benches in New Zealand. He's not injured. He's just sitting there because he can't make his way into the team. So New Zealand has an embarrassment of riches. I think Kane Williamson's form has been a concern for them, but he kind of played a decent innings. Again, I don't think he's anywhere close to his best. But given the kind of firepower they have at the top, in the middle, Kane Williamson can afford to have a, you know, bat at 70% of his potential, and they're still very much the favorite. So between Pakistan and New Zealand, I would say it's New Zealand on form. But again, Pakistan, you obviously know that, for those of you of us who followed Pakistan cricket, is that Pakistan plays on individual brilliance. So on one day, anybody can come out. And that's really the greatest USP of Pakistan. Their team is full of match winners. Always has been. So while they might some days not gel well together, but they have the potential. Any one of them can come in and take a game out on their own. Just very few teams have that ability. And Pakistan has consistently, as long as I've watched cricket, have always had that kind of a team, even at their worst. They have the potential, any one of them, to take a game away. Especially a T20 game, where again, as I said, it's not a question of winning multiple sessions. It's winning a mini session and you have the game. Now, India versus England. Now, obviously here, I want India to win. So in a way, it hurts for me to say that India are not the favorites. India have played decently Obviously, there has been a big problem in the top two. I'd said this months before the World Cup started, that India's the best batsman is batting at number four. He should be opening. We should have had Pant and Surya Kumar Yadav open with Kohli at three. Because I don't think that this those two openers that we have can consistently, against very good opposition, really strike at a like 150. Because they're not 360 players. That's one of the problems. The second is they're not right-hand, left-hand. There were a lot of problems. And Rohit Sharma has had a terrible T20 World Cup. He scored 150 or something against Netherlands. And he just didn't seem like he was going to score anything. And this is, as I've said, you know, this is a young man's game. And I'm hoping that Rohit Sharma will prove me wrong and play a great innings against England. But given Rohit Sharma's great performance in ICC tournaments, this is a real letdown. And I'm hoping that the India, at least that no matter what happens, this is Rohit Sharma's last major T20 tournament. There are other people who I think would much better. This is again the tragedy of Indian cricket, that Surya Kumar Yadav at his best will not be given the slot that he should have. We will wait till Surya Kumar Yadav's career is on the decline when he's now the most senior, then he will get his slot. At which point of time there'll be another guy who should have the slot who will not get the slot. This has been problem with India from time immemorial, and we have that. So India's main problem is, besides the bowling, of course. And my main problem has always been that, you know, on pitches, like, you need to have really fast bowlers. You know, somebody like Andrik Norgay, you know, that guy who comes in at 148, time, ball in, ball out, accurate, height. It's very difficult to hit somebody like Norgay. We don't have anybody like that. We don't have anybody with a Bhuvneshwar Kumar, again, first spell, but second spell is the problem. First spell, with the ball swings, he's okay. But then when he stops swinging, he's cannon fodder on these pitches. So India is going to struggle big time against England, because the problem with England is, but the main thing about England is, it's just a side where everybody, straight 1-2 down to 8, Moeen Ali down, they can all hit at 150 plus. They can consistently go at 150 plus. Again, England also hasn't had a great tournament. Really, if I could think of it, it's like all the best teams, they haven't had a great tournament, but all the minnows, they've had great tournaments, which has kind of equalized and has made it such a competition. England has had some, you know, rain problems. I mean, the game against Australia was washed out, which I was really looking forward to. But England also, I think, has, against India, it does start out as the favorite. Their bowling also is weak. I think England's bowling can be targeted. But their batting, in terms of their depth, in terms of their hitting power, unparalleled. I think it's going to be England-New Zealand final, which would be terrible to watch. For me, it's going to be a repeat of the previous one-day World Cup, which again, I don't want. I want it to be obviously an India-Pakistan game. I don't want it to be an India-New Zealand game, because I know if it's an India-New Zealand game, India will lose. Paradoxically speaking, I wouldn't have said this if this was the 90s, that among everybody, India has the best chance against Pakistan. Not so much against England, and definitely not against New Zealand. This is one side that we just cannot beat. And there's a reason for that. The reason I think we cannot beat New Zealand is it's a side which makes very little mistakes. See, India makes a lot of mistakes when they play. They sometimes get by because the other side makes more mistakes. And Pakistan, again, is a side notorious for making a whole lot of mistakes. So that's why we have a better chance against Pakistan. New Zealand plays very error-free cricket. They like play cricket. They're not, and this has been the nature of New Zealand cricket. They do the simple things in the right way. And they don't overreach. There's no superstar. Nobody's trying to say, hey, look at me, I need an IPL contract. This is not West Indies. Then West Indies, whenever they play, you can see that the guys who already have IPL and like major league contracts are kind of dialing it in. And those who don't are trying to audition for something else. They're basically auditioning for another job while playing for West Indies. Moonlighting, as our IT companies would say. So that's why West Indies can't win. But New Zealand, they don't do that at all. they're always into the game and they don't make errors. And I think India really struggles against teams which don't make errors. So India is very good against West Indies. They're very good against Pakistan. They're very good against even Australia. Australia too. The new Australia does make a lot of errors, I would say. New Zealand doesn't. England has made a few this time. But again, the main thing with England is they have such a strong... It's weird saying this about England, but they have such a... Every time you think that, okay, Jason Roy is no longer a thing, he's gone. Out comes a guy called Harry Brooke. Never seen him, saw him, man. So they always have, you know, there's an endless pipeline now in England of really hard-hitting batsmen. So maybe Harry Brooke won't work out. They'll have another guy. The pipeline seems never-ending. And by the way, I honestly feel that we should not be playing Dinesh Karthik in the semifinals. I don't know what the status of that is. I think it was made clear that Pant was being played in the last game because he hadn't had a game. I don't know what happened to Chahal. I mean, he didn't get a game either, but just means he's not going to get a game. But I sincerely hope that in the semifinals they have Pant, because, you know, between Pant and Dinesh Karthik, you know, you have to have Pants, especially against a side like England, where I don't think that we're going to have the luxury of having somebody come in the last three balls to get seven runs. And that too, Karthik has failed here, right? We saw him in that game. So it's very difficult for Karthik to succeed. You can't have a guy whose only metric of success is we will give you three balls and you have to score nine runs. And you'll only get three balls. That's it. You can't do this consistently. And I just, there's no other team which has a person like Karthik. So I just don't understand why we have somebody like Dinesh Karthik. You cannot expect that that guy will survive for, let's say, five overs and act like a major batsman, which you can hope that Rishabh Pant will be able to do. So that's about it for this this podcast. I think I will postpone my Musk and Freedom of Speech podcast for the next time. Till then, everybody, stay well. Bye-bye.